Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
While you're taking a break from sports, KSON is putting you on the road to Stagecoach 8 times every weekday, thanks to your San Diego County Toyota dealers and Cox Communications. Ready for 3 days of live country music in the desert? Sign up now at KSON.com.
Matter what, it's final hour on a Tuesday. Glad to have you with us here on 97.3 The Fan. Woods literally walked out of the studio like as Paul was playing the music for us to come back. And I think he didn't realize what time it was. And I have no idea where he just went off to. Paul, any clues?
Probably Amber, the restroom.
You know where he went? No?
He goes to the restroom.
Yeah, he does.
8 times a morning.
Woods has reached that age, which I'm also that age, but it's funny. Maybe I just don't hydrate enough and Woods is... drinks more water or something than I do. So anyway, we'll just carry on without him for the time being. Final hour coming up later this hour. We will talk more Kobe Bryant, and we'll also talk about one of the other victims in the helicopter crash, Coach Altobelli, who died. Rich Hill from the USD Torero is another coach in that small coaching fraternity in Southern California. College baseball coaches certainly has known him for a long time. Is going to be with us coming up in a little while. But Woods, welcome back. You left like right as we were coming back. It was, I guess we were just talking and then...
had to go potty.
Yeah, I know. That's what we figured.
Yeah.
That was the speculation.
Go potty a lot.
All right, it is Super Bowl week, and with all the Kobe Bryant news, obviously we haven't really been able to dive in quite as much as we normally would on a typical Super Bowl week, but had the big opening night, the media night last night at Marlins Park in Miami. Festivities are ramping up in South Florida, and joining us right now on our SDCCU fan hotline, former 49ers nose tackle, now team insider on the radio. You can hear him on 95.7 The Game up in the Bay Area. Ian Williams with us here on Ben and Woods. Ian, it is great to have you on Super Bowl week. Appreciate your time.
Oh, yeah, for sure, man. It's always good to talk about some 49er football, talk about some Super Bowl football.
How exciting is this? I mean, 49ers Nation, they're back, and haven't won in 25 years, haven't been since Colin Kaepernick took the team a while ago. This has got to be a thrill to be back in the big game.
Oh, yeah, it's fun to see the team, how much they've come in the past couple of years to go from Chip Kelly, from Jim Tom Sula to Chip Kelly to Kyle Shanahan and kind of find some stability and be able to turn the roster over, because that roster in 2017 was really bad, 2016. And to be able to get to a Super Bowl within a couple years of your head coaching job, it's amazing to see where this team's come. And I'm excited for Super Bowl Sunday, but I think he can win. I think the parade on February 5th is going to be live and it's going to be lit.
All right, the parade already, yeah. So,
oh yeah,
this is gonna be hard for me, Ben, because Ian was a standout at Notre Dame,
right.
And I'm a huge Irish fan, and it's a pleasure to talk to you, Ian Williams.
I appreciate you. Go Irish, all day.
Go Irish all day. Yes, I can just do. We just do Notre Dame talk. People,
please
probably,
not.
Probably, okay,
no,
all right, no, all right,
thank
all
you.
Right, all right, all
don't
right.
Hate on. Don't hate on.
Yeah, exactly.
We're in Southern California. We're a lot of USC fans listening here, Ian. I'm sorry. I wasn't even going to bring it up,
Ben. We don't even.
Oh man.
We don't even talk about USC anymore. That's a sad state what that program's turned into, Ian. But I'll tell you what, man. This game has all the makings of everything in the Super Bowl that we wanted last year that we didn't get. That was one of the worst Super Bowls we've ever seen.
No, it wasn't. Don't start that.
Oh, I did. Well, you're a defensive guy, so I'm sure you loved it. I was bored to tears.
That was a beautiful game. Just to watch, because the thing about football and strategy,
I know.
That's all that game was. In a low-scoring game, if you just watch the communication and the defense that was played on both sides, that was great football. I mean, I loved it.
Now, see, Ian, I bet if you watched a 1-0 baseball game, you'd be like, man, I'm bored out of my mind. That's how I felt about the Super Bowl last year.
I went to the A's playoff game here a couple months ago.
Yeah.
And this was like my first baseball game I have been to like in probably forever. And I had a good time, but it's just it wasn't enough action. Too much standing around and stuff like that. I mean, I need some guys hitting. I need some basketballs going through the hoop, something like that.
I know, man. I know.
This is the age-old debate, though. When you have teams like the Chiefs, the 49ers, and offenses, if the offense has perfect timing, if the quarterback can go back three steps, throw the ball perfectly on target to a wide receiver coming right out of his cut, there's no time for the defense to get into the backfield. I mean, a great offense that's in sync in the NFL nowadays is going to be able to put up points, even on a great defense. Would you not agree with that?
I mean, yeah. I mean, the rules have kind of changed to where, you know, it gears towards, you know, points and, you know, more, you know, more yardage and more of a favorism towards the offense and stuff like that. You know, you ask guys like Jerry Rice and older receivers where they had to literally fight through all the hand contact and the press coverage and stuff like that. But now, you know, you really can't touch a receiver after 5 yards. So everything's geared towards, you know, points and, you know, yards, fans getting all the excitement of the big plays and stuff like that. But I still think, you know, defensively, you can still shut down the offense and slow them down and get them out of their rhythm.
We're talking to Ian Williams, former San Francisco 49er. He's an insider for 95.7 The Game. And, you know, listen, when you talk about shutting down an offense, the Chiefs, they can score seemingly at will sometimes. And I'll tell you, man, it has been a delight to watch the Niners defense this year. Something's got to give, and you're really confident in what the Niners are bringing. How do you slow down and stop a guy like Pat Mahomes?
Yeah, it's going to be a tough one, obviously, to go out there and stop Patrick Mahomes in that offense because of, you know, Tyreek Hill and all that speed that they have out there. But a lot of their routes and a lot of their game is backyard football. You know, he wants to, like, Patrick Mahomes wants to get outside of the pocket. So the 49ers, you have a great pass rush. You have to understand the past few years, anytime Tom Brady struggled or anytime a team has struggled in the Super Bowl, they went against a great pass rush. You got to think about what we had early in the decade with Justin Smith and Aldon Smith and that pass rush that we had right there. And then, you know, Michael Strahan, an OC with the Giants, and then, you know, the Eagles with Fletcher Cox, you know, these type of D-lines, you know, it gives quarterbacks trouble. It gives offensive coordinators trouble because now they can't block these guys up front. So what do the 49ers have? They have one of the best defenses, you know, statistically in the NFL, you know, historically, you know, really good numbers. And that front four, those five first-rounders on the front line, Dee Ford, Eric Armstead, DeForest Buckner, Nick Bosa, and Solomon Thomas, like those five guys, man, they've been playing lights out all year long. And the Minnesota Vikings, the Green Bay Packers, literally didn't have an answer for them, didn't know what to do with them. And, you know, that was the outcome of the game. You know, it was a blowout, and, you know, it could possibly be the same thing on Super Bowl Sunday, especially if Patrick Mahomes can't, you know, improvise and make things happen outside of the pocket.
Raheem Mostert, 220 yards, four touchdowns in the NFC Championship game. He's been the breakout star. If the Chiefs sell out to stop the running game and try to stop Mostert, can Jimmy Garoppolo, obviously they didn't need him to throw a bunch of passes against the Packers. If he has to throw 30 to 40 passes for the 49ers to win that game, is that a formula that could work for the 49ers?
I think early in the year, maybe not. But I think where they are right now with the emergence of Deebo Samuel and then the trade for Emmanuel Sanders and then also having George Kittle and multiple other threats that you can use, if they try to sell out in the run, I think Jimmy G can definitely step back there and throw the ball 30, 40, 50 times and be able to, you know, help his team win. You know, he's done it a few times this season. You know, when they played, you know, Arizona on Halloween, you know, he had to throw the ball a little bit more to be able to bring that team back. You know, last week, the Tennessee Titans, you know, they had been running the ball against everybody. Derrick Henry was a monster. And, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs, they were like, no, you're not going to, you know, run the ball on us like that. You know, we're going to fill the gaps. We're going to sit our linebackers at 4 yards, and we're going to make sure they're on their toes and not on their heels so they can come downhill and condense those gaps so that he can't get a head full of steam and be able to break the tackles from our safeties trying to come up and fill those holes and stuff like that. So I know they're going to come up with a game plan and they're going to scheme up the 49ers, especially to slow down Raheem Mostert and Tevin Coleman and those running backs because, you know, if you can make it easy on the 49ers, and they'll just hand the ball off like you've seen. Like, Jimmy G hasn't really thrown the ball. You know, they're going to make it easy as they can for Jimmy G, especially if he doesn't have to do anything. If they're running the ball, that's as safe as you can be in the playoffs. You know, I'll hand it off and, you know, get 4 yards every play and milk the clock. But at the end of the day, I think Jimmy G, if it's put on him, on his shoulders, I think he can handle it.
Now, Ian, you were a young player, right, the last time the 49ers went to the Super Bowl against the Ravens. What was your experience like then and compare it to what you're going to be doing this week, you know, covering the Super Bowl and getting ready for the Niners and watching it from the sidelines?
It's just seeing it now from the media side, like last night, opening night, you know, all the players, you know, you know, it was cool. Like, I'm on the outside now, you know, doing the interviews, you know, interviewing the players. And I remember back in 2013 when we were playing the Baltimore Ravens, I was the guy, you know, in the jersey, you know, walking around, you know, being interviewed, asking the most random, craziest questions that you can probably think of. But it's just exciting just to see the players out here having a good time. They had their, you know, phones out and everything, taking pictures. Social media is such a big part of society now. So we didn't have that. It was more we were just sitting around talking and just you know, making fun of, you know, certain things that we would see. And, you know, it's fun to see the difference from, you know, back then to where we are now. But it's definitely been exciting just to be down here in Miami. And we're here all week for NBC Sports Bay Area. So it's just been fun to see all the festivities. I can't wait for this weekend.
Now, I'm sure Jim Harbaugh had you guys on lockdown as players. Are you gonna enjoy some of the festivities this week now that you're under no such restriction this time around?
I mean, you talk about the players?
I'm talking about going out to the parties, you know, the events, things like that, like really, really let loose on Super Bowl week.
Oh, no, the players, no.
Not you, you, really. You personally.
Oh,
you,
me? Oh,
yeah, what do you got? I want to know what you're gonna have, how the high life is going to be lived in Miami this week.
I'm in the 305, and then you got to understand the Super Bowl. Look at the initial Super Bowl, LIV. That's one of the best clubs in the world, Liv. I'm going to be there Super Bowl Sunday because in the red and gold, we're going to win on Sunday, so we're going to be fine. I'm going to be
answer.
Out there live. You go,
good hey, answer, man.
Make sure if you see me and I see you, you didn't see me.
Ian Williams, former 49ers nose tackle.
Former Notre Dame great.
Now with NBC Bay Area, 95.7 The Game up in San Francisco. Ian, really appreciate it. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate you guys.
That was fun. Ian Williams on our SDCCU fan hotline. San Diego County Credit Union has low mortgage loan rates. Apply today. Equal housing opportunity. For details, call 877-SDCCU4U or visit SDCCU.com. So, Ian, what he was talking about on Media Night, or back then I think it was Media Day still, they have the podiums and the tables set up for the big players and the coaches, and they get the, you know, the big crowds around him. But for the, like, undrafted, you know, rookies, yeah, like he was second-year guys, they're basically just, you know, standing around and in a uniform like, hey, if you want to come up and talk to me, you know, maybe one reporter comes up, someone asks a wacky question, but they're not at a podium or anything. So that was his experience on Media Day when he played in the Super Bowl for the 49ers.
Yeah, you've done some radio rows in your past.
I have.
Benny. Somebody texted me this morning and said, hey, are you bummed you're not at Radio Row? And I said, I'm really not. I did it once. It was a lot. It's a lot. It's very involved. Now, I mean, we may go tomorrow. We may not. We might be there tomorrow. We might not be.
Flight could be, we could be heading to the airport right after the show.
Or we might not.
Or we might not be. We'll just keep it out. Keep
or
it up in
might.
The air.
Or we might. We might be at Radio Row tomorrow.
We might go on Thursday and then come back here on Friday. You just never know.
You just never know what's going to happen with Ben and Woods. We like to keep it a mystery.
We do. Not a mystery what's coming up next. It's been just the remembrances of Kobe Bryant have been amazing, but he wasn't the only person. He and his daughter who died in that plane crash. Another local, like Southern California figure in sports,
yeah,
who's had, you know, a long and distinguished career in college baseball, died in that helicopter crash along with his wife and daughter as well. Rich Hill, the coach of the USD Toreros, is going to help us put Coach Altobelli's perspective, yeah, when we come back. That's next with Ben Woods. Let's get a check of traffic right now on 97.3 The Fan. Here's Kelly Danick. It's Ben Woods here on 97.3 The Fan. Our thanks again to Ian Williams, 49ers insider and former nose tackle, played on the Super Bowl team that lost to the Ravens in that Harbaugh Bowl in 2013, and now back covering the Super Bowl as a member of the media. Interesting perspective. We talked earlier, obviously, a lot about the remembrances of Kobe Bryant that have happened the last couple of days, Woods, but just don't want to forget that there were, you know, seven other people on that helicopter that weren't in the Bryant family, and including someone who had an accomplished career in college baseball here in Southern California. And joining us now on our SDCCU fan hotline, another accomplished college baseball coach in Southern California, USD's Rich Hill is with us. Coach, it's good to have you on this morning on Ben and Woods again.
Hey, Ben. Always great to be on with you guys. Wish it was under different circumstances.
Yeah, so I'm looking at the coaching career and of John Altobelli at Orange Coast College, JC in Southern California. And it was funny. I noticed he has a 705 career wins, had 705 career wins at the time of his passing. You have 702 career wins at USD and, you know, over 1,000 in your coaching career. But obviously a huge overlap in terms of your coaching career. I've got to imagine that your paths have crossed many, many times over the past couple of decades.
Big time. He was affectionately known as Alto to everybody. Nobody called him John. We're about the same age, you know. He was at University of Houston, was a team captain there in 85. Actually, good friends with our athletic director, Bill McGillis, there at Houston at the same time. And you know, he took over for a legend at Orange Coast, Mike Maine. And, yeah, I mean, we got players from him all through the years, impactful, tough kids. And we also sent him players. So we had this great pipeline, you know, Alto and USD and USF when I was up there as well. So it was a great relationship, not only professional, but as a friendship. You know, I mean, it was crazy, and it is crazy. It still really hasn't sunk in yet, you know, and it's less than 48 hours away, and you still just kind of trying to wrap my head around this thing.
Yeah, I think we're all there. We're talking to Coach Rich Hill from USD, and I think we're all there, you know, and it was important to us to make sure. I mean, obviously, Kobe Bryant's one of the biggest names in sports history ever, in the history of sports, and we understand mm-hmm. that. But even more close to home here, you know, a guy from Orange County, you know, coaching up there. I play adult baseball with a lot of guys that played for him and know him very well. And everybody just had the kindest things to say. He was a hard-nosed coach. He was a tough coach, but by all accounts, a very, very good coach. What was he like as a man, a husband, a father?
When we go through these remembrances, you know, and we're talking about people's lives and legacies, you know, everybody just, you know, has these glowing, you know, things to say about people. And this is one of them. And this is legit, man. I mean, this dude, as a community college coach, you know, I mean, that's kind of a different deal. And, you know, you're going to get 18-year-old guys that maybe weren't doing what they needed to do academically, and they bounce back, and there's a little bit something to their lives, you know, and they go to Alto and become men. And that's going to be a common theme and a common thread, you know, that you'll hear is I grew up, I became a man. And those community college baseball coaches, I mean, they're more counselor, mentor, and role model than they are a baseball coach. And, you know, Alto he had such joy. I mean, it was genuine when he would be able to place one of his kids at any four-year school, you know, and he had that reputation. You go to Orange Coast to move on to the next level. I mean, he genuinely, you know, I use that word, you know, I mean, it's a genuine deal where he would really care about his players, and that came through. That's what allowed him to be tough, you know, on these kids that were kind of going through the wilderness at that 18, 19-year-old mark, you know. And then you use the word impact, you know, and that's why, you know, everybody, you know, is just, you know, they speak about him and their eyes well up, especially the players and his assistant coaches. I mean, his assistant coaches that go through there were treated like family members, you know. And speaking of his family, you know, his wife and him were a team. And that's kind of why it hits me so hard. It's like his kids. I know JJ, you know, he's a scout for the Red Sox here in the Southern California area. We actually, you know, tried to hire him, you know, after college and everything, and followed his career. But his wife was one of those wives that, you know, he took to the ABCA convention every year. she was hanging with him in the lobby and just kind of chopping it up with all the other coaches. And she was right at home, right on his arm, and at all the games, wearing the Coast jersey. His little girl was a bat girl. So it was that kind of deal. His assistant coaches would be over at his house for meals all the time. Same thing with the players. So you talk about that kind of man who's extremely dedicated to his family. That was all it was about for him. And then to take it one step further in his professional career where, I mean, hey, it was bigger than winning a game. If he could place his players, you know, at a four-year school, see him graduate, see him play in the big leagues. So it was that kind of guy, you know, and he will be sorely missed, not only in the baseball field, but, you know, all those kids that he impacted.
Among those players that passed through, Aaron Judge, New York Yankee, former Orange Coast Colleger under John Altobelli. Hey, Coach, we really appreciate you just giving us a little perspective on this. Before you go, just give us a quick update. I know you guys are gearing up for another season at Fowler Park, starting here real soon, and no pressure here, but I know you got to turn it around. It's been a few years since the last WCC championship.
Well, we won a WCC championship in 2015, so it's not that long ago, but it has been a while since.
It's 2020. What have you done for me lately, Coach? Let's go.
I want to be like Rocky Long, man. I want to have one of his press conferences like, hey, man, what do you mean? You know, but I love that dude, Rocky. But, hey, this is the year, 2020. We've got a great lineup. We got some really good young pitchers. And it just depends, again, you know, if we have the ingredients, you know, do we have the recipe? That's my job. We're working hard. You know, we just had a great weekend with Chris Bryant back in town, you know, being inducted into our Hall of Fame. The energy, the vibe is level 10 right now. We're working hard. We're going to be extremely prepared on game day. We're going to control the controllables like we always do. Unbelievable schedule. But I really believe this is the year we're going to do it.
Well, we all love Rocky, but Coach, I can't see you going back to Kalu to coach third base. So I think you're stuck around here for a while.
I'm not talking about that. He has hero press conferences.
He really does. His press conferences are pretty legendary.
Some good sound bites, man.
Well, Coach, good luck this season to the Trueros, and again, thank you for sharing your memories of Alto, Coach Altobelli, on what's obviously been a really tough week here in Southern California and around the world. Thanks.
Well, I appreciate you, Benny.
All right, Coach Rich Hill. Yeah, they're getting just started. Baseball season is here. It's college always starts before, you know, spring training and Major League Baseball gets underway. So if you really need a baseball fix, you go down to Fowler Park, which is just a gorgeous place to watch a baseball game.
Phenomenal place to watch a game.
Really is. Or play one. I know you've been on that field a couple
times. Yeah, I've gotten to do a little BP there. That was really fun.
All right, when we come back, we have not even heard the end of the tributes to Kobe Bryant. I don't know what the Lakers are going to do. I mean, there's going to be a lot of pressure.
Man.
After today's game's been postponed, what are they going to do on Friday and beyond? You know, we can throw some thoughts around. I have no idea. I don't envy the situation that they're in because there's almost no way to like perfectly handle this. It's just too much life. It's too much person to really memorialize in any one event. But they're going to have to try. We'll get to that coming up next with Ben and Woods here on 97.3 The Fan. One of the fascinating stories I heard about Kobe Bryant last night turned out to not be true.
Oh, imagine that.
Yeah, get to that coming up in a second here on Ben and Woods. Right now, let's get a check of traffic on 97.3 The Fan. Here's Kelly Danick. You'll have dogs set away. The city of Santee and 97.3 The Fan present the 5th annual Fido Fest, presented by Subaru of El Cajon, My Furry Valentine Edition. It's coming up on Saturday, February 15th. This fun-filled day, an opportunity for dogs and dog lovers to have a tail wagging good time. All sorts of activities for dogs and humans. Agility and training demonstrations. Off-leash play area, doggy pool area, dog adoptions, giveaways, live music, beer garden, contest, doggy cakewalk, doggy cool zone, vaccinations and microchip. We're not even close to done. Food trucks, face painting, education, shopping, 80-plus vendor booths. And then that's it. We're done.
That's how it ends?
That's how it ends.
80-plus vendor booths.
Well, there's an exclamation point in there.
80-plus vendor booths!
Right. A lot of dog people out there, so.
I mean, we're all dog people. Everybody in this room.
Santee.
It's coming up.
Long,
February 15th.
Long piece of copy.
Ian Brown from MLD. See, if you had to read all those things, you'd probably make as many mistakes as I did.
There's no question.
So last night, ESPN, I thought this was cool, just scrapped their normal programming and aired Kobe Bryant's final game of his career with the Lakers. Legendary 60-point performance, which was, you know, very cool. I flipped it on for a little bit. I didn't watch the whole thing. Paul, I know you were watching last
night. All of it, Paulie?
I flipped on midway through the first quarter and then, yeah,
Hammer.
Watched it.
I just watched the fourth quarter.
All right.
When it mattered.
What can I say? Mamba out.
So, I watched Mrs. Doubtfire.
So did you hear the story? So Mike Tirico told the story of that game.
Yeah.
Oh, which I thought was just incredible. And went back on the video. At the end of the game, Kobe's sitting at 58 points, last game, and he gets fouled, and he goes to the free throw. He makes the first one for 59. And they go back on Twitter, and they show the video that on the final free throw, as Kobe's about to shoot it, Gordon Hayward steps into the lane a little bit early, and it would have been a lane violation. Now, Kobe made the free throw anyway for 60.
Of course he did.
As Mike Tirico tells the story, Gordon Hayward did that as the ultimate sign of respect to make sure Kobe got 60 in his final game. Just in case he missed it, he'd get the second chance on the lane violation to, you know, get another opportunity to get to 60. It's like, why not? It's the last game of the year. This is like something that I can do. I thought it was an amazing story. I mean, I was just like floored because the video makes it look like that's exactly what happened in that game. Gordon Hayward, though, tweeted last night that it's not true.
Really?
He did not do that on purpose. In fact, he said, and this is Kobe Bryant, he wouldn't want me to do anything like that. He wouldn't want to be given anything at all. He said, that night is a night I will truly never forget. I can remember almost every moment of it. My goal that night was to compete as hard as I possibly could against Kobe because that was what he was all about, and I wanted to give him my very best. He got 60 on me, and I didn't give him anything free all night. What happened on the free throw line was not intentional. Kobe would have lost respect for me if I gave him something free. That's what made him so very special. So Mike Tirico, and I don't think he made it up. I think he genuinely believed that was the case,
yeah,
but hadn't confirmed it with Gordon Hayward, and Hayward had to tweet out that, yeah, nice story, but not what happened that night. Still, I was like fascinated by that whole description and sequence of that final game, which really is legendary. I mean, think about most guys' last games, even legends. You know, Tony Gwynn, I remember his last game. He had to come up as a pinch hitter, grounded out to shortstop in his last at-bat. Guys don't drop 60 in their final game as an NBA player. That just doesn't happen.
So I was watching the game last night. I remember where I was the night he scored that 60 points because I was telling Megan, we're watching it. First of all, he ends the third quarter with 37 points.
Crazy.
Like, he finishes with 60.
Yeah.
Remember that. So he's about to go off. And I remember that night. It was in April. It was obviously the last regular season game for the Lakers in a season that didn't matter at all. It was the same night that the Warriors were going to break the Bulls' 72-10 record. They were going for their 73rd win. And everybody was planning on watching that game. Nobody cared about that game.
Yeah,
because
you
night.
Start to hear Kobe's lighting it up.
You see Kobe's box score on the bottom ticker, and you're like, "Oh, I got to flip over. I got to find this Lakers game."
Yeah, no, that is how you want it. I mean, that's like the storybook going out. Jeet's walk off was pretty solid. His last AB was pretty cool. Shot to the right side, drives in the game winner. Which, by the way, people were saying Evan Meek just floated one in there and was actually laughing about it after.
I am so mad about Tony Gwynn's final at-bat because I was there 2001.
Yeah.
And it was like early October because it was after 9/11 and everything had been pushed back a week. Tony had only been limited to pinch hitting duty. He was hurt, so he could come up for one at-bat a game, take a couple of swings, tip his cap, you know, get the ovation every time. So they're playing the Rockies, completely meaningless game at the end of the season. So the Padres, this is back at the queue, as part of the final weekend, had chalked out the number 5.5, kind of in that spot between third and short, where,
yep,
Tony just made a living with all those singles. He just poke his bat, go the other way, single after single his entire career. And who was the shortstop at the time? Whoever it was for the Rockies. I was so mad because he planted himself like right on that 5.5, which is exactly where Tony hit it. If I had been the Rockies, like, the third baseman's going to be on the line, the shortstop's going to be up the middle. Give Tony that entire thing for a single end of his career, which it normally would have been, but I took it away from him, and I was like, so mad, because Tony couldn't run at that point.
Yeah.
He was just hobbling to first base after he hit it, so he had no chance of beating anything out. It just would have been cool for him to end on a single, but on the, you know, the Gordon Hayward point, you don't want to give him anything either. Tony earned every hit he got. He didn't need to be given something by someone at the end of his career.
I'm looking it up. I'm trying to find out who it was, Benny.
Because I hate when athletes do that. There was that Brett Favre when he just fell down so Michael Strahan could get that record-breaking sack.
That one was pretty tired. That I'll was give you awful. That one. That and was pretty bad.
I can't stand
I don't know
athletes.
Why I want to say like Nafy Perez or someone.
I'm with you, Hammer, like though. That I remember that one. I was like, oh, that's tired.
And it was disgusting, too, because for me, I was a diehard Brett Favre fan who, like Kobe, was the ultimate competitor, would do anything to win.
Yeah.
And for him to just fall down and give Strahan a sack, that was weak.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty tired, too. I thought that was tired. It may be Nafy Perez, Benny. Benny is, it's going to be.
He's upset.
He was on that team, so I could be right on that one.
Could be. It's excruciating for him to not know off the top of his head.
He was on the team, so at least my memory is going to tell me it was Nafy Perez. But anyway, that was my end of the. But no one 60 is still goes down as one of the more nutty sports accomplishments in a final game.
Yeah,
for sure.
I hear you, man. But you talked about going into break. You know, what are the Lakers going to do? I have no idea. I mean, what do you do when you go sit in that conference room today, yesterday, and say, all right, well, we've canceled the game for Tuesday. That's a good move. Going to give us a chance to kind of collect ourselves and strategize, because it's so important. It really is. This is how this will be that memory that Laker fans have and they can cherish forever. How do you do it? How do you immortalize an immortal? You know, a guy that's just so larger than life, and it's so unexpected. There was no time to plan for this. He didn't have a debilitating
disease. But also have you have almost unlimited resources in terms of, like, if you wanted any Hollywood celebrity to come and, you know, perform.
Literally anyone.
Anyone in Los Angeles would come and do this for Kobe Bryant.
Their agents are probably calling the Lakers saying, we'd like to offer so-and-so, sir, if you need somebody to do the national anthem, if you need somebody to present something, if you need somebody to just be there.
But at the same time, you don't want it to just be some cavalcade of celebs. That wouldn't feel right. I mean, it's not a concert. It's a basketball game. I mean, you could go understated.
It's LA.
Almost,
there's no way they're going understated.
This is an almost impossible situation. And then, is this all you do? Is it just the game back? Or, you know, is there going to be a grand, like almost like a state funeral in Los Angeles? Are you gonna have thousands of people get together at Staples Center? Do you need somewhere bigger? Do you need the Coliseum and have 100,000 people coming out if there's a memorial service or
If it was there, I think they could fill the Coliseum. I think they at least, you know, give it a run for its money. But I don't know. There's part of me that does like the understated spotlight on something, moment of silence. Obviously, they're probably going to do that anyway, but it can't be.
Vanessa and the girls go to a game like that already on Friday? It seems too soon.
I don't think so,
they
man.
Won't be there Friday.
I don't think so. You know, you don't want it to look like Apollo Creed and Rocky IV. You know, it can't be a spectacle like that was. But I do think it's going to be, whatever it is, it's going to be inherently Kobe. They're going to make sure that they stick to that. And it's such a hard thing to have to do and plan and execute. Can't even imagine. I really can't.
One of my favorite tributes yesterday, I didn't see it live, but people were tweeting it out, came on one of the SportsCenter editions. Is it L. Duncan or Ellie Duncan?
Oh, no, this was tough.
This is gnarly.
She was anchoring and told about the time she met Kobe for the first time when she was 8 months pregnant, but just had to get a picture with Kobe Bryant, and she shared the short story on SportsCenter, and it was like, oh, this is just another one of them.
It's likely that you're hearing many personal anecdotes about Kobe Bryant, so here's mine. I met Kobe one time, backstage at an event for ESPN in New York, and I saw him and I thought, oh my gosh, that's Kobe. I gotta get a picture for the gram. That's the picture. I didn't get it for a few minutes because as I approached him, he immediately commented on my rather large 8-month pregnant belly. How are you? How close are you? What are you having? Mm-hmm. A girl, I said, and then he high-fived me. Girls are the best. I asked him for advice on raising girls, seeing as though he quite famously had 3 at the time. And he said, just be grateful that you've been given that gift because girls are amazing. His third daughter, Bianca, was about 1.5 years old at the time. So I asked if he wanted more children. And he said that his wife, Vanessa, really wanted to try again for a boy, but was sort of jokingly concerned that it would be another girl. And I was like, four girls, are you joking? Like, what would you think? How would you feel? And without hesitation, he said, I would have five more girls if I could. I'm a girl dad. When it came to sports, he said that his oldest daughter was an accomplished volleyball player and that the youngest was a toddler, so TBD. But that middle one, he said, that middle one was a monster. She's a beast. She's better than I was at her age. She's got it. That middle one, of course, was Gigi. When I reflect on this tragedy and that half an hour that I spent with Kobe Bryant 2 years ago, I suppose that the only small source of comfort for me is knowing that he died doing what he loved the most, being a dad, being a girl dad.
Got me.
Wow. Oh,
God bless.
I don't have girls. You don't have a girl.
No.
But that is, I mean, just...
Makes me want to. Be honest with you.
Yeah.
I mean, Jesus.
Just the pride. And that story goes from a Kobe story to a Gianna story. But the pride that she conveys that Kobe had in his daughters, his girls, is what we could all strive to be as a parent.
No doubt.
Just amazing.
No doubt about it.
Wow.
How do we talk for seven more minutes? That's what I want to know after hearing that.
I know.
We could play more remembrances. We haven't heard from Shaq yet.
Oh, yeah, this is good, too.
Yeah, I mean, Shaq appeared on Podcast 1. He sent out the tweet on Sunday night, but he addressed it on his podcast yesterday.
I'm not doing well. I'm sick. I'm just getting over the death of my sister. And the same thing hit when I found out this news. I was downstairs working out with Shakir, and my other son, Greg, showed me the TMZ clip. And I yelled at Greg, so, yo, man, get that shit out of my face. Just get it out of my face, because you know how the internet hoax and all that. You know, I figured somebody was just playing around. I said, I didn't want to believe it. And then everybody's calling me. Is that true? Is it true? So I'm like, it must not be a hoax, because now the whole world knows this information. So now I'm saying, please don't be true. Please don't be true. Please don't be true. And I'm watching. And then you get the confirmation. And sad enough, then you hear his daughter's with him. I didn't do anything. I haven't eaten. I haven't slept. I'm looking at all the tapes. But I'm sick right now. Mm.
You know, Shaq and Kobe had a famously up-and-down relationship, but you can tell that Shaq didn't expect it just to be over like that.
No.
I think he feels like there was so much left to be said and done with Kobe Bryant, and that's part of the reason why he is so sick about it. You know, just
you got to think it was more just it was a rivalry, almost, not really like a hatred. You
no.
know? Like they didn't hate each other.
No, even when Shaq was doing his rap dissing of Kobe.
Yeah.
I think it was all kind of tongue in cheek with some good nature. I mean,
think so too.
I'm sure that there was some times where the two of them like said, "I just enough of this guy at this point. I just can't
take
it
anymore." When
you're
that elite and you're at that level and you're that much at the top of the game, you think you're the best. But Kobe thought he was the best. But Shaq thought he was the best. And they both thought, you can't win without me. And eventually it just reached a boiling point. But I don't think there was ever any like actual ill feelings toward each other.
It's very Ben and Woods-esque, I think.
Yeah, I would say so.
Shaq and Kobe.
Who's Shaq and who's Kobe?
He's Shaq.
I'm Shaq.
You know that.
And you're Kobe. You're definitely the...
Hammer's Derek Fisher.
Well, neither of us are... Neither
I don't want to be Derek Fisher. Can I be Rick Fox? Please.
Yeah,
I want
to be Rick Fox. Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, no, Robert Horry. What am I doing?
All right, Robert Horry.
Shot Bob.
Just boom, 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 boom.
Can't be Derek Fisher.
That's fair enough.
You have more of the intensity to you, and I'm the big kind of lug.
I'm definitely more likely to employ the Mamba mentality than you.
Can we have Ben rap Woodsy How My Ass Tastes?
Shaq?
I'm going to say no.
Ben reads raps.
On that.
Do we have time for a couple more here? Speaking of emotional, Tracy McGrady. I'm sure you probably caught this one at some point on social media yesterday.
I went on, played for the Magic. He was playing for the Lakers and playing for championships. And me over here, I'm competing, trying to win scoring titles because I'm not competing for championships. And our relationship kind of got lost because of his mindset and what he was trying to accomplish. And I was over here. And we go and play, you know, our careers. And here we are. We have kids. And we're reunited, you know, through AU basketball because of our kids. We're coaching our kids. And, you know, that connection, just reconnecting with him and bringing back those old memories, going out to watch his kids practice, you know, and having playing these games and him watching my kids play was like the greatest thing. And I'll sit there and watch Gigi, and before the game, I'll go up and I'll give Gigi a hug and tell her, you know, to go out there and kill. And she's like, don't worry about that, Uncle Mac. I got this. And she was special, man. She was special. She was built like Kobe. Her mannerism, everything. I mean, just to watch her play, it was like watching a young Kobe. The move, she had a fadeaway. At 13 years old, I'm watching this girl, and it just looks like her dad out there. I'm like, damn, she's going to be special. And she's not going to get that opportunity. He's not going to get that chance for her to carry on that legacy. And I was out the last tournament. I sat and I talked to Vanessa and the other three girls for like 20 minutes watching Gigi play. And my heart just goes out to Vanessa and those girls and Pam and Joe, Shea and Sharia. I mean, this is hard, man. This is hard.
You know, we're still just at the very beginning of this grieving process. And this is going to go on the months, you know, even years. You know, the legacy of Kobe Bryant is going to continue on here, Woods, and just still so fresh. It's still impossible to put it all into perspective.
Can I say that that's a terrible way to end our show today?
Really?
I am super, sorry. Super bummed out now, so I apologize.
Didn't mean to do that. Well, how about this? We have some tickets to give away.
Okay, that's
we
better.
Can do that. Hammer, if you'll be ready to answer some phones here. Third caller, we got a pair of tickets to see Miranda Lambert with Cody Johnson and Lenko, if I'm saying that right, at VA House Arena on February 21st. If you're interested, start dialing 833-288-0973, 833-288-0973. Concert tickets. See, much, much happier way.
97.3 The Cow.
Here we go.
Mighty Cow.
That's it for us today. Paul, great job. It's been a tough couple of days. Producers, hosts, Hammer, Woodsy, it's just a hard time to be, you know, doing this for 4 hours.
Yep.
It's hard time for just a few minutes to talk about it.
Yeah, right, hearing those things, man. Yeah. Brutal.
All right, before we go, this hour's Grand Slam giveaway keyword is tour. Text tour to 72881 for your chance to win your share of over $180,000 in the Fans National Cash Contest. Message and data rates apply. Good luck. We'll be back tomorrow, 5 a.m. on 97.3 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.